Today is August 21st, 1992. This is an interview with Leticia Hernandez as part of the oral history project of the Hijas de Cuauhtémoc. The interview is conducted by Maylee Blackwell. this is back from the first interview when you're telling me about your grandma. Her name's Concha Gonzalez. How do you spell that?
C-O-N-C-H-A, capital G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z.
Okay. And I don't think I ever got your parents' full names.
Victor and Bertha Hernandez.
Okay. And when you were telling me you were born at a house across from Hollenbeck Park, how do you spell Hollenbeck?
E-N. H-O-L-L-E-N-B-E-C-K.
Okay, wait, say that again.
H-O-L-L-E-N-B-E-C-K.
Okay. And then, I don't know if you told me this or not, but kind of when you were growing up and up until the time you got into college, what kind of occupations was your dad working in?
He was a truck driver, and he was he started working in sheet metal.
Mm-hmm.
Like he worked at Bethlehem Steel Company. He worked for O'Keefe and Merritt. He worked for the Little Golden Books. He worked for just a bunch of little jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers
market.
Not farmers market, but you know they have the farmers coffee, and I think he used to be a truck driver for them.
He worked a lot of different jobs.
And then he started working in the steel company and as a sheet metal worker, and that was better money than all these other little menial jobs that he had. I don't know if he was union or not. I don't think so.
Okay. So he just kind of, and then when he went to school, he wasn't working, or he was working?
No, he wasn't working.
Okay.
He was going to school full time.
Oh, and you were talking about how your family kind of encouraged education and this, and I was wondering, do you think it was usual for, a person where you lived in your context to be planning for college, and, like, did the rest of your girlfriends plan to go to college, and I mean, was that normal, or?
No, yeah, because when I was in Catholic school, in elementary school, the whole focus
mm-hmm.
is for you to be on a college preparatory course,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the school itself starts training you
mm-hmm.
for college, so I think that's where I got the idea.
Okay.
But my parents believed in education as a way out
mm-hmm.
or as a way up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they ever mentioned going to college.
They
believed in it.
Uh-huh. So, well, did you remember when you were younger, in high school, junior high school, do you remember other girls talking about what they were planning to do, or I mean, was it on people's minds?
No.
Hmm. So just because it was it seen as traditional to go to college, or non-traditional, or was it normal? Or
I think it was seen as non-traditional, but we were my little group, especially in high school, we were on the fringes of the college prep
mm-hmm.
group. So we were kind of being led in that direction,
mm-hmm.
not really knowing why, or even knowing it.
I mean, yeah.
But we were just in that little group.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't we were college prep, but not on the fast track.
Okay. So what were women or what were girls at this time thinking they were going to do?
Get married,
but have college education.
Not really, because the girls I hung around with did not, and none of them did. None of them even, my comadre dropped out of high school when she was 17. She never went back. And we saw another girl, she got married right out of high school, and we lost track of her right after she got married. She just
mm-hmm.
Disappeared off the face of the earth. And
Marriage land.
And let's see, in the projects, my girlfriend Sonia was No, Sonia was just, her main thing was to graduate from high school and go to work. I think that was the main emphasis of people, was to just graduate high school because that was important to do and find a job.
Okay. Just to make money.
Just to make money and work until you got married.
Okay. Were people making money to help out their family or to get on their own?
To get on their own.
Uh-huh.
We were, I think we were in a group of fairly progressive households as far as that went. You know, as far as kids working, it was for their own spending money and for their own items of luxury.
Okay. Oh, and then the mounts, you were telling me about the mounts?
The mounts?
Mounts. I didn't even know how to spell it. I was
like a mount, M-O-U-N-T.
Okay, mounts.
Actually, it's a singular. It was only one mount. Yeah.
There's only one. Okay. Okay. You were describing like how when you first got into college and you went into you got in and UMAS was there and they were already organized and they were kind of trying to recruit or indoctrinate, whatever you want to say. And it all kind of started to make sense to you why you know, kind of discrimination and but you don't remember having this kind of, you know, you don't remember naming it, or you think it was there, but you didn't name it, or about sex discrimination or discrimination of...
Before I got to college?
Mm-hmm.
No, I never thought about it until you just kind of roll along and
mm-hmm.
you're part of the society in which you live, and you don't really stop to think about it.
Yeah.
I guess I was maybe just complacent and, you know, happy with the status quo.
Did your parents ever say anything?
No. No. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother was Miss America. She always talked about how she hated the little town where she grew up and how she was so happy to be in America and that everything was so much better in America and she was so glad to be here, blah, 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 on and on. So, you know, as far as I was concerned, this was the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Land of the free and home of the brave, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. okay, let's see.
Land of cornflakes and milk.
Cornflakes and milk. Well, you could have your picture in the cereal box.
That's right.
Okay, and we talked about how, let's see, I'm kind of interested in how, you know, how you started to become more active and everything, but do you remember, like, how, were there progressive steps, or did it just kind of, you fell into it and just went along with it, or... I mean, were there steps of, like, consciously, or, like, you know, how was your consciousness?
I think the thing is, you come onto the campus, you argue with the point, and you don't believe in it, and you step away,
mm-hmm.
and then, or at least for me, and then things happened,
mm-hmm.
little things, that after having heard about discrimination and how
mm-hmm.
our people were treated different, and then having them actually happen to you kind of peels off that layer of incredulity that
mm-hmm.
is in your eyes, you know, and you just kind of say, whoa, it really does exist, and
mm-hmm.
it's happening to me, and it's not right. And so you start hanging around to see what else there is to be offered. Basically, that's how it happened to me, just kind of hung out and started believing everything that they were saying to me.
Mm-hmm. But how did you become more and more active? Or did you, I mean, was the group disorganized together, or?
From the group that I came to college with, they were pretty diverse, and they were all pretty, trying to think of all the people that came in. We're all fairly conservative in our ways and in our families,
mm-hmm.
and then coming onto the campus and having this barrage of radicalism thrown at us. We didn't, as some of us bought into it and some of us didn't buy into it. I think a feeling of, for me, probably wanting to belong because of that feeling of isolationism or isolatedness, being on the off-campus dorms and not really belonging to a group, you know, that coming onto campus and having a place to go, the Mecha trailer, the Umas trailer, whatever mm-hmm. it was called, provided a sense of security, mm-hmm. a sense of, you know, if I come here, it's kind of home. Same. It's safe. It's someplace where I can see people of my own. You're sitting in a classroom of mostly Anglo students, and you're feeling isolated, alone, little tiny. And you get to feel like yourself when you go to the campus, and then I mean to the trailer. And I've now curled your wire.
It's better that way.
You want me to start from there? I think basically that was it. And then just coming there and being there, you start listening to people talk and you get involved with them. You know, you've had, by this time, you've had some incidents happen to you, and you say, well, yeah, you're right. And, you know, how can I learn more about it? Or what else can we do? And just got kind of picked up and rolled along with it.
Snowball, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that this group of women that came to be known as Hija?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that they were ever called a different name?
No.
No.
Were they?
I don't know, because I've seen things, I've read things that they were called, you know, Las Mujeres or Mujeres de Longo. I don't know what that means. Or does that ring any bells?
Because we're always trying
ding,
to we're trying to create a barrio here in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing. I always wondered, why would anybody want to create a barrio? Mm-hmm. But so they would call themselves Longo, mm-hmm. which for Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would call, and I don't know if in the community outside of the campus, if away from in East Long Beach or North, wherever, where are we?
Mm-hmm.
Where there's a big
East Side,
where mm-hmm. there's a big Hispanic community, they were always there. And did they already have gangs that were calling themselves Longo, and that's how the kids on the campus got the name? You know, how did... Anyway, so maybe. Maybe because... But I don't remember having an organized name.
Okay. Do you... Within Mecha, do you remember that... well, Anna had said that before the newspaper started that there was kind of a group of women that met casually, but it was under kind of the guise that women needed more political education that they didn't understand. So, you know, it was kind of her job or Corinne's job or somebody's job, an older woman, to teach these women, get them in line. And is that true?
Whip us into shape, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I think, because that group that came after us were mm-hmm. kind of young. And I remember... there was Susan Castañeda and Armando's wife, and that whole group of girls, younger girls than us even, that we were trying to bring into the fold and to kind of, yeah, politicize them and make them more active.
Mm-hmm. Why was it a separate, why were girls in this meeting but the guys weren't?
I think because they were, I think Anna and Corinne were more politically aware and more feminized.
Mm-hmm. There were different issues.
Issues, and I think they honestly believed them, and they needed to get a core of people to get behind them who would think the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in talks with individual people, they found that, a lot of people did think like them, only mm-hmm. they had never put it into words or made it anything concrete or solid. And so I think that they decided that they should go forth and create something and start a movement within a movement.
Yeah, so okay. So then it started off to bring women into the student movement, and then it seemed like it transformed or became a vehicle for women to voice their complaints against what was going on, or was it seen as taking a different course, or was it seen as going right along?
I think both.
Mm-hmm.
A combination of the two. But then because there were so many complaints, and not really complaints, but you know, that feeling that the guys just wanted to do their own thing, and we were just supposed to be there to pick up the trash after them, you know, and that they didn't want to let us, or that they didn't really see us as part of the leadership, or that they didn't see us as part of the group that should, should run and make policy, but that we should just be there to support and help prop them up. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the women who were involved at that time all felt those same slights and mm-hmm. felt those same kinds of, we all had those feelings that they were just mm-hmm. pushing us aside to do the menial work.
So do you think it was a big step? Was it a big step for the women to get together and organize? I mean, was it a big deal?
I think so, yeah.
And so
I think it was a positive step in the right direction. I think mm-hmm. I think it helped a lot of women see themselves in a better light, you know, because we could have had more feelings of insecurity or an inferiority if we had mm-hmm. not had that group to fall back on.
So the group kind of worked as a support group as well as a political group.
And I think basically that's how they tried to sell it to a lot of the younger girls, as a support group. Mm-hmm. You know, all the while trying to get them a little bit more politicized, mm-hmm. a little bit more radicalized as far as feminist ideas.
Well, I guess it was because everyone kept dropping out. A lot of the women were dropping out. You know, as far as who was staying and who wasn't. Do you remember that a lot of women dropped out?
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, after...
A lot of women who were good students were dropping out.
Oh, yeah, were dropping out and not staying in. And why? Why were they dropping out?
Yeah.
I think because of pressure, maybe pressures from home. Mm-hmm. I think maybe a lot of them just were not ready to be on a campus away from home, you know, as maturity wise. I mean, not really able to deal with it. In my own case, I think that I dropped out because I was not equipped to handle all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of girls, they would come and they would deal with it for a year or so and say, you know what, I'm going back home. Mm-hmm. And then just packed it up and went home. For me, it was like, well, I'll just kind of hang out around here, but because I don't want to go back home. Mm-hmm. Because I knew that I felt that for me going home would be a step backwards instead of going forward. Other people have other home life situations that would probably be more nurturing and would have, you know, helped them pursue their goals.
So what kind of things made it hard, though, for women?
I think being unprepared mm-hmm. for that. It's a huge radical change mm-hmm. to get onto a campus, especially if you're coming from East LA or from an all-Hispanic neighborhood and background. You're dumped in this Anglo-Saxon, really Anglo-Saxon-run enclave, and you're given... There's nothing there. You know, you have to be an adult, and you have to...
Fend
for yourself, and I think maybe some people are just not ready to do that. So it's just too big a world for them, you know, because I think a lot of Chicanas are very sheltered, and even though we want to say that, hey, you know, we're women of the world and all this other malarkey, that we're adults and we can handle it, we're actually very sheltered and very naive, and you throw us out into something like that, and, you know, it's a sink or swim situation.
But it had to be more than that, or else the guys would drop out. Were the guys dropping out too? Or?
A lot of them were, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think a lot of them were. Okay. Because there was always that little core of the same people.
the ones that stuck it out.
Also, I think there were a lot of people who were just, who came in, got their education and left, and because they weren't hanging around the UMAS trailer for the next 6 years,
they got what they came for.
They, you know, came in, got their education, left, and did what they had to do. Mm-hmm. You know, go on with life, and mm-hmm. their goal was not to come in here and become politicized or anything else. Mm-hmm. So I think that may have been part of the problem too.
So you think that sometimes it you could be more successful if you weren't involved, or?
Well, I think if you had a real focus on your education and what you wanted to do with that education, and a more sense of yourself, you know, this is good self-esteem and personal goals to help you get out.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to get, I know that. It's not easy to get out.
Even and if you're out there floundering around without any goals and without any idea of how to get any goals, you know, it's easy to just kind of hang out and I'm just talking from my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me.
Okay. We were talking about people earlier on the last interviews, inside within the organization, Mecha, how, you know, relationships were developing between people, and you had mentioned that, you know, some of the women within the house had the same problems that you had with men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so was that really prevalent that there was relationships between Ihas and Mecha, or, you know, between the women and men and within Mecha? I mean, how is that going on? And how did that have an effect on things?
I think it was an undermining effect that I think the, without mentioning any names, I think that the women that were involved with Ihas had sexual relationships with the men in Mecha,
mm-hmm.
and they may have been past prior, they may have been old and gone,
mm-hmm.
but those things were still there, and it made it difficult for, I think it made it difficult for the men to see us as women with a mind as opposed to just women with a body, somebody mm-hmm. to use. And I think that a lot of times there were rivalries between women. Excuse me. Okay.
We were talking about relationships between people.
And I think there was a lot of jealousies between some of the older women who had already been there and the fact that they had either been dropped or were not being pursued any longer by the men and were now, and whose focus now was on the younger girls.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a lot of
Did this jealousy include kind of a awareness of what was going on as far as, you know?
I don't know. You know, I don't know if they, you know, and I could never really put my finger on it. You know, did they want to go back with these guys, or was it the love-hate relationship, you know, where, you know, it was a good fun thing, but in reality, it was not really that much fun, you know, to have this relationship with this guy, or was it just a status thing to make it with this guy because he was a leader in Mecha, or because we were both the leaders, you know, that we should be together kind of thing, and the guys were just, you know, out to get what they could get, you know. And I think it's hard for women who have been raised in you know, if you fall in love and you know, this is such a strange area. you grow up and you're very very sheltered, very naive sexually, and then you get all this knowledge, and then, you know, you think you're so smart, and then, you know, you fall in love with somebody, and so you go to bed with him. I mean, for you, that is it. You know, you're going to make this guy your life now because this is the way it's supposed to be. And this SOB just wants to get you in the sack two or three times, and after that, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's hard for girls, especially back then. Well, and I imagine it's the same for girls now. You know, you grow up with a certain idealism, and then it it doesn't work out for you. This is not working either.
Okay.
You know, women, I think women and men are different as far as, and I'm sure at some point you can have sex for sex's sake, but I think that most women tend to want to put love and feelings and emotion behind it, and the guys, the guys don't, you know.
Well, do you think part of the organizing was a sense of being used, or
the sense of being used? Mm-hmm. I think part of the fact.
Were they in fact used? Do you think? I think
so.
Pretty blatant.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah, we were used, used and abused.
Yeah, we were.
Okay. The only thing that I can't, well, yeah, I think we were, and I think it was a reaction to that. You know, that they didn't really want us as partners. They just wanted to use us.
Yeah.
You know, they would take our ideas, not only just, you know, physically, but I think they would take our ideas and then go promote them as their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that pisses people off.
Yeah. I can understand why. So then it was supposed to feel good to do this group on your own, to be doing this for yourself.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And did it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a good ego booster. Although, you know, after a while, you know, you feel like you've got something to say and people are now listening to you because you're making a ruckus. And I guess it's kind of like the same thing that they felt when they started UMAS and started giving the campus problems, you know, because they were making noise and because they were organizing and getting together and saying that they wanted this and wanted the other thing. And, you know, gave us the same empowerment.
And was there a lot of support there between women?
I mean, I think for a while there was. I think for about the first couple of issues there was, and then, you know, the inevitable infighting.
So why did this all stop? Did everyone just go off and graduate, or did?
Let's see. Anna and Corinne had already graduated.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, I guess they were seniors when we started. And then when they graduated, they just had to move on. You know, the same with everybody else, that Bancho's wife, and God, I can never remember her name. I think that they...
is this why the group stopped? Because people graduated, or just because it was... Thank you.
I think the group stopped because... Well, because of the formation of the bigger groups,
mm-hmm.
and just being co-opted and pulled into...
What bigger groups?
La Comisión,
mm-hmm.
and the groups from LA. You know, we just kind of fizzled out. When Anna and Corinne left, and Cindy and Sara left, and so most of the movers and shakers of the organization left, and then the rest of us just kind of just let it die. You know, and then from these other groups, other organizations, more lasting organizations formed.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why? I mean, why were all the women involved in this, in the EHANs that were mentioned?
I think they had different needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're, I think a lot of the women that had, that's a terrible thing to say. If a lot of the women had, I think by this time the men had decided who their partners as far as fairly permanent mates would be,
mm-hmm.
and then when that happened, when you didn't have them jumping around as often, dating everybody, that other people in the Meche organization just said, well, you know, everybody's cool, you know, there's really no need for it, you know, they weren't feeling the same pressures, they were like Armando by this time had. Dolores, and they were together, and they were going to get married, and so it was seen as a partnership, and so, you know, they believed in this, they put on a facade of being a very liberal, feminized,
mm-hmm.
kind of partnership,
mm-hmm.
that they weren't a man and wife, they were a husband and wife,
mm-hmm.
kind of team, and so, you know, when the guys are putting out that kind of rhetoric, You know, I think that the need by other women to go into a feminist organization is not there because.
Did they change because of the group, do you think?
Pardon?
Do you think that the change came because of the group or because they got older or.
No, I think they were trying to make our group less.
Go away.
Go away and minimize us, and they won.
But they did change in a little way. Or at least.
Not really, I think verbally.
At least they gave lip service.
Yeah, they did give a lot of lip service to it.
Mm-hmm. So then Metchum might have changed because of it? No.
I don't think so.
No.
You know, because. For instance, I took a copy of the newspaper home and